Thank you for taking time to be on this meeting. As you know, I am Samuel Rottenstein, CEO of the Natural Born Alchemist Global. This here to my left is Adam Krassenberg.
Good morning.
In charge of corporate finances, and to my right, Ethan Goldwitz, our lawyer.
Hello.
And that's Anna Hoffmanstein, our secretary.
Good morning, Alex.
And she'll take notes during the meeting.
What's this about?
We feel your podcast is not achieving the quarterly financial goals required to fund this operation.
May I, Mr. Rottenstein?
Go ahead, Mr. Krassenberg.
Alex, you need to increase your diversity quota in order to increase potential ad revenue.
Indeed, diversifying content while adhering to inclusivity standards can substantially boost engagement metrics.
I'll ensure these details are meticulously documented for future strategy sessions.
Please be quiet, Anna. The men are talking.
So basically, I should make the podcast more inclusive, and you'll sell more ads?
Precisely. Our analytic projections indicate a significant uptick in potential market share upon implementation of these enhancements.
Absolutely, Alex. By aligning with our strategic objectives, you can tap into a broader demographic and align with our brand's corporate values.
It's essential for us to ensure proprietary content is synergized with our overarching operational goal.
Look, I'll be honest. I'm not really interested in chasing ad dollars. Natural Born Alchemist isn't just a brand to me. It's a platform for like ideas that challenge the status quo. I'm more passionate about exploring the intersections of like alchemy, anarchy, and free speech. That's what gets people thinking and sparks real conversations, not just another commercialized podcast chasing ad revenue. You know, if this means having a smaller but more engaged audience that values these ideals, then that's a trade-off I'm willing to make.
That's not how this works, Alex. You can't just ignore the realities of the market and expect to keep the lights on.
It sounds like you're deliberately overlooking the business side of this. Passion doesn't pay the bills.
Exactly. By dismissing this opportunity, you're jeopardizing the entire venture. It's frustrating how dismissive you are about strategic growth that could benefit everyone involved.
Yeah, I understand your frustrations, but I won't compromise the integrity of this platform for financial gains. I mean, if there's like some product that I feel comfortable promoting for some reason, you know, why not do ads? I don't know. But if doing ads is and getting more ads, if that's what our partnership hinges on, then maybe it's time to reconsider our approach. You know, that's all I'm saying.
Alex, standing by Israel and Ukraine, for example, is not just about politics. It's about supporting democratic values and global stability. It's crucial for our platform to take a stance on significant global issues that resonate with our audience's values.
And let's not forget the importance of promoting public health through vaccines. By advocating for vaccination, we align ourselves with science and support communal well-being. It's a pivotal issue that affects every listener, no matter their location.
We know you stand by free speech, but free speech is dangerous.
Dangerous, yet liberating. If free speech is a double-edged sword, let's wield it like a master swordsman. That's what I say. After all, nothing ventured, nothing gained, and I'd rather gain a thought-provoking conversation than mere ad revenue. You can't do this to me. I started this podcast. You know how much I sacrificed?
Alex, the board is unanimous. You're out.
Out, am I? I don't think so. Well, welcome to episode 350 of the Natural Born Alchemist podcast. My name is Alex and I'll be your host. I don't know if I mentioned it, but I've become a beekeeper. And this is part of my long long-term scheme to completely get off the rat race and, you know, retire early. That's my plan. And in order to retire early, I need some sort of income that doesn't involve either an employee or a boss. You know, I don't want to deal with other people. And beekeeping is something that I've always thought was a cool thing. And you can actually make money on the honey. It is called the liquid gold, after all. And it's also, you know, you only work 6 months a year because the bees are in hibernation for half the year. So, you know... And it's cool to work with bees and to be part of the insect world. So I thought that was a good job for me to have to cover my expenses when I don't do any other job. Unless you want to donate on the regular, and that would also help. But not many do, and I don't blame you. I don't expect handouts. I'm a self-made man. You can be a self-made man and not be a billionaire. You know, often when you say a self-made man, you often talk about somebody who's a multimillionaire. You know, you can be a self-made man and just be rich enough to just live a simple life without having to bow to some sort of boss or employee. Bees are based, and that's what I want to talk about in this episode. While it might be challenging to proclaim a single species as the most important in the world, bees are often highlighted as a crucial pollinator, playing a key role in the ecosystems they inhabit. The bees' tireless work ensures the production of many plants, which in turn support a multitude of other species, including humans. And the bees contribute to diverse food sources and habitats, and without the bee, the entire food chain and ecological balances could be disrupted. So if you want to exterminate a specific animal or insect or a specific race of people, which extermination would have the greatest effect on life on this planet? And the answer is the bees. That would have the greatest effect. So, you know, in this day and age when everybody's on about climate change and doing things for the environment, whether you believe in the climate change agenda or not is irrelevant. Because my philosophy is, I always think you should try and do things that support nature. We shouldn't be like a parasite on nature. We shouldn't be a sponging of nature. We should, you know, cooperate with nature and, when required, support nature. And when required, protect nature. So I'm not the climate change activist agenda supporter by any stretch of the imagination. But I've always, and I will always, do things that support the environment within reason. And I think being a beekeeper is one of those things you could do that actually does have an effect, more so than carpooling to work. So I want to talk about a few things about the bees that you might not know. So strap in and let me put on my teacher hat and tell you a few aspects of bees that I find interesting. And because in this podcast I often dive into the esoteric, let's start there. Like most things, you can, when you try to look at the history, you always end up in Egypt. The ancient Egyptians believed bees were born from the tears of Ra, the sun god, and considered the bee divine messengers. Symbols of bees were commonly found in Egyptian iconography, representing royalty and power. And in Greek mythology, bees were associated with Artemis, the goddess of the wilderness, and they were often thought to possess an otherworldly wisdom. These cultures celebrated the bee not only for its role in pollination, but also for its symbolic ties to community, diligence, and harmony. A thing I was surprised about, something I didn't expect when I got my bees. I have one beehive. I had two. Now I have one. When you become a beekeeper, don't expect 100% success. I had a beehive that died, basically. It never really got a queen. Now, thinking back on it, when I bought that beehive, I'm not sure it even had a queen. I might have been ripped off. I don't know. They did produce a queen. And when the queen is produced, it leaves the hive to go to get impregnated, you know, and then comes back to the hive to lay the eggs. But for some reason, the queen never came back. So the beehive just basically died out, and just the bees lived till they died from old age, and then it died. But the other beehive is doing fine. What I didn't expect when I got the bees were that it's not a thing, it's a pet. So the same feeling and emotion I had when I got my cats, I got when I got my bees. And even though the bees are like a beehive can be like 40,000-50,000 bees, it's hard not to look at it as an entity, as one thing, like, you know, a hive mind. And even though I can see and spot the individual bees, I enjoy that as well. But, you know, I kind of like relate to it as this hive, this community. In shamanistic practices, which are prevalent among indigenous cultures worldwide, bees are revered as messengers between the natural world and the spirit realm. Sometimes the bees can be looked at as totems, attributing to them the ability to travel between different planes of existence due to their profound role in pollination and sustaining life. The tireless work ethic and communal lifestyle could also mirror the shaman's journey of service to their community, emphasizing the importance of each individual's contribution to the well-being of the group. And bees usually buzz at frequencies ranging from 200 to 400 hertz, but they seem to be most content when resonating in the key of C. In spiritual practices, the note of C is closely tied to the root chakra, which influences your sense of stability, security, and overall well-being. An imbalanced root chakra can lead to feelings of anxiety and stress, whereas a well-balanced one can promote emotional strength and groundedness. So, just listen to the sweet buzz of the bees. The connection between bees and the ancient craft of Freemasonry is both profound and symbolic. Freemasons, with their storied history of symbolism and allegory, often draw upon the bee as an emblem of industry, harmony, and cooperation. The beehive, in particular, represents a model of an ideal society for Masons, one where all members work collectively for the common good. Sounds an awful lot like communism.
Silos,
but with a queen, like with a monarch. A communistic monarchy. The beehive reflects the Masonic principle of mutual support and the belief that the welfare of the community prevails over individual interests. Freemasons in their lodges aim to replicate the industrious and collaborative spirit of a beehive, underlining the importance of each member's contribution to the collective success of the order. And while it might sound like communism, I don't think it's communism, because if a beehive was a communistic society, then the queen would eat all the honey, but the queen doesn't. So I guess when you talk to a communist and you say, like, yeah, communism might be good on paper, but in reality, look at China, look at Russia, or the former Soviet Union, and all the genocidal activities that went on. Communism is not really a good system. But I've never heard a communist say back to me, no, the best example of a communistic society that actually follows the principles is a beehive. Something to consider. Let me actually ask AI, because I just thought about it, and let me just ask AI what it thinks. One second. Okay. Is there any similarity between a beehive and communism? It bears some resemblance to the principle of communism. While both systems emphasize communal welfare, a beehive operates as a natural biological system without the ideological or socio-political implications inherent in human-implemented communism. Yeah, so that's why communism sucks, because the only way communism would work is if it's a natural biological system rather than what it is, an ideological or socio-political, which is anything ideological is just usually ends up with somebody getting shot in the head. What about sacred geometry? And the profound connection between bees and sacred geometries is another facet of these remarkable insects that continue to fascinate scientists and naturalists alike, as well as me. And the honeybee uses the hexagon in the honeycomb construction, and it's not only an architectural marvel, but also an example of nature's efficiency. This geometric shape is known for its strength and maximization of space with minimal material. Representing a design that mathematicians label as the honeycomb conjecture. Sacred geometry, a term used to describe patterns and designs that are foundational to the structure of the universe, sees the hexagon as a symbol of harmony and balance. Bees instinctively create these patterns in their hives, embodying a natural order that resonates with principles revered in sacred geometry. And the honeycomb is beautiful. What's fascinating is when you look at the frames in the, because in a beehive you like have like frames, like maybe 10 frames, and when you lift each of these up, they have this honeycomb, and some of them they put pollen in, and some of them they put like honey and or eggs, depending on what they use that particular frame for. And when they, because in a beehive, they produce the bees, that the female that go out and gather the honey, but they also produces the male bees, the drones. And it's funny, it reminds me of like in Star Wars, the prequels, where the clone army, you know, like when they go to this factory and there's like all these clones, they all look the same, just like stacked next to each other. And if the hive creates too many drones, you're supposed to take that honeycomb out of the beehive and get rid of it. And but so I broke it apart one time, and you could see all these, like, it looks almost like they were cast in clay or in white clay, like all these drone bees, identical one after the other. It's hard to describe with words, but mainly because I've never tried to describe it before. But anyway, it's quite amazing. In Hinduism, the bee occupies a place of honor, seen as a symbol of love, and also associated with the god Vishnu, Krishna, and Kama, the god of love. The buzzing of the bees is sometimes related to the vital spiritual concept of Om, the sacred sound of the universe, representing the essence of ultimate reality or consciousness. In some traditions in India, the bee on a lotus represents the heart's ability to unfold its inner potential through the practice of yoga. Moving on to Buddhism, and yes, I'm going to go through all of them because I think it's fascinating. In Buddhism, you find the bee often admired for its role in the ecosystem and their non-violent nature in gathering nectar, reflecting the Buddhist principle of ahimsa, meaning non-harm. The bees' laborious lifestyle and their communal and harmonious way of living are frequently highlighted in Buddhist texts as an example of how individuals should strive to coexist peacefully and work diligently toward the collective good. And I've been stung twice. And I still consider them peaceful because both times I got stung, it was my own fault. I learned a good lesson. Like when you, because weekly you go and check the hive to make sure it's all right. And sometimes when you do that, especially if you're an amateur like I am and not as smooth with doing the things I need to do, you disrupt the bees. They get a bit annoyed. And what you should not do, like after you've done some work with the hive, you should not later in the day walk past the hive or go to the hive without protective gear, because they will revenge on you. You know, that's happened to me twice. So if you do something to the hive and they get a bit annoyed and angry about it, you should leave it alone and not go wait a few days before you go back to it. That's what I've learned. Of course, the best thing is to work with the hive in such a way that they don't get angry and annoyed. But, you know, like as a novice, as a beginner, I am a bit kind of clumsy. And I do improve as I move along, of course. And I my aim is to, in the future, when I've done this for many years, my aim is to not use protective gear at all. That's when I know I've become a master beekeeper. What about Christianity? Well, they also play a significant role in Christian symbolism. They're seen as emblematic of purity and the soul's immortality, mirroring the Virgin Mary's purity and sweetness. Honey, with its natural sweetness, becomes a metaphor for the spiritual sweetness of Christ's teachings and the goodness of his words. And the industrious nature of bees resonate with Christian values of hard work and perseverance. And throughout monastic history, monks kept bees not only for the practical benefit of wax and honey, but also as a reflection of living in accordance with nature under the divine order. The bee's ability to transform nectar into honey is likened to the Christian spiritual journey of transforming life's experiences into spiritual wisdom. In Islamic culture, bees hold a significant and revered status as well. It's reflected in the teachings of the Quran. The Holy Book has an entire chapter called An-Nal, which translates, it's funny because in my native tongue, that basically is how you pronounce anal. Anyway, it translates to the bee, indicating the reverence in Islamic thought. The chapter underscores the virtue of bees and how their behavior is a sign of divine inspiration, drawing parallels to humans who strive for purity in their actions and intentions. Muslims consider the honey produced by bees to be a healing substance and a gift from Allah, symbolizing health and sustenance. This deep respect for bees in Islam extends to the practice of beekeeping, which is seen as not only an agricultural pursuit, but also as a spiritual one. Which is why I also am into beekeeping. It's funny, like when I have some land, not big, just like, you know, like when you have a house, you have a bit of land around the house. I mean, when I say I have land, it's not like I'm a landowner and I own like acres and acres. I have a tiny area around my house, you know, like that land. That's what the land I'm talking about. Anyway, I've seen insects and worms and whatever. Not paying too much attention to it, more than, oh, there's a spider, there's an ant. But as soon as I got the bees, it's my pet. I need to protect it. I need to protect it from ants, from wasps, from hornets and other things. And so you start to like look more, like you start to see, and you see patterns. You see, like, where are the ant trails? What are the flight patterns of the bees? I mean, I know where my bees take off, like where they fly off and where they come in for their landing, and like what direction. And it's just like an airport, you know. So once you know the direction of all the planes, you know where to look for them. And I remember also and there was like these hornets, like they're huge, and I had to follow them because I wanted to find their nest, maybe get rid of it because they were threatening the beehive. So like you become more involved in the world of insects, and it's a fascinating world. I've never been like an insectophile. What's it called? It's called entomophile, a person who loves insects. I've never been one of those, but I've always respected insects. I've never been like afraid of insects. I mean, like, I don't want a spider crawling in my bed, but I don't mind spiders in the house. I actually like to have a spider in the house, you know, because it, you know, you really don't want flies. Flies eat shit and spiders eat flies. So I think that's a good business partner to have in your house. But you know, you have a busy life. You do stay. I have kids. You know, I don't have time to see things. And sometimes spiritual practice is often about seeing. I guess that's what, when like you're a monk or you meditate, there's a lot of time. You have a lot of time to see. And it is quite amazing when you actually start seeing the bees. I mean, I'm sure you're listening now, you've seen a bee. But have you actually seen it? Like, watched it for a whole day? It's quite amazing. My favorite insect will always be the bumblebee. I mean, they're just fucking awesome. I love them. But bees come close. I mean, it's similar to B, but same kind of family. I just think they're cool because they're so fat and they're flying. The way they fly, just barely above the ground. I think it looks cool. I also like the fact that the bees who collect the honey is female. I don't know, something about it. I like that. It's makes them kind of cute. Anyway, in alchemy, the bee embodies transformation, moving from flower to flower, akin to the alchemist's quest for turning base metals into gold. And you know, what in nature symbolizes more something that's turning something into gold when the bee from the flower creates liquid honey? You know, like when you harvest the beehive, when you take the honey and you just pour it out, I mean, like it's amazing. And yes, we do. I don't take all the honey, of course. I leave enough for the bees as well, and I give them some extra as well. But I don't rob them fully. I want it to be a partnership. And it is a partnership because I do protect it from things, make sure, and I haven't done it yet, but I will make sure they have enough food for the winter and also that it's warm enough in the hive. Anyway, in terms of alchemy, the occult symbology of the bee and the beehive highlights the bee's role in broader metaphysical concepts and spiritual teachings, where they are sometimes seen as a messenger between the physical world and the spiritual realm. Very similar to the view bees have within shamanism, which is, and I've always connected shamanism to alchemy. They're very similar. In a sense, you could say, or I could say, that alchemy is a modern form of shamanism. Now, the beekeeper, now we're talking about me, or hopefully one day this will be me, because now I'm just a novice. But the relationship between bees and their beekeeper is one of mutual benefit and subtle communication. Beekeepers serve as stewards of the hive. I have to make sure all the time that the hive has water. Bet you didn't know that. Yes, it needs water. Bees need to drink. And the beekeeper monitors the health of the bees and protects them from pests and diseases and provide them with additional food during scarcities. The bees, in return, offer the beekeeper the sweet reward of honey and the products of their labor. An interesting custom is the intimate bond between beekeepers and their hives in the tradition known as telling the bees. This is rooted in folklore. If a beekeeper passes away, it is believed that the bees must be informed of the beekeeper's death. This ritual involves going to the hive, speaking gently to the bees, and perhaps draping the hives in black. It is a testament to the respect and love beekeepers hold for their charges and an acknowledgement of the deep connection that is felt. And I might put this in my fucking will, that if when I die, somebody's got to go to the hive and inform the bees, you know? Failing to tell the bees was thought to risk them leaving the hive or stopping honey production, an omen of further misfortune. This custom underscores the symbiotic relationship humans share with these creatures and highlights a profound understanding of stewardship and communion with nature. And I like to be in partnership with nature. Like I have the beehive produces honey and other things for me, and I protect it. My cats, they kill the mice that keep going into my house. But I always imagine that the mice, when they speak about my house, they call it the house of death. When it comes to honey, beyond its sublime sweetness, honey is revered for its health benefits, packed with antioxidants that provide protective effects for the heart and can improve cholesterol levels. It also acts as a natural cough suppressant and aids in alleviating sore throats. It's antibacterial and antifungal, makes it a natural healer. It accelerates the repair of wounds, and regular consumption of small quantities may develop immunity against seasonal allergies, creating a natural defense against pollen indigenous to the area. You also have the royal jelly, a milky secretion produced by worker honeybees, is revered for its purported health benefits and is often dubbed a superfood. Royal jelly serves as the food for the queen bee throughout her lifespan and is responsible for her remarkable size, fertility and longevity compared to the other bees. It's rich in protein, carbohydrates, fats and vitamins, and royal jelly is believed to enhance immune functions, lower cholesterol and have anti-inflammatory properties. I haven't harvested any royal jelly. That's advanced level beekeeping. I'll get to it at some point. The characteristics of royal jelly have made it a sought after ingredient in dietary supplements and beauty products, though scientific evidence to fully substantiate the claims is still ongoing. But anyway, royal jelly is unique in its composition and continues to intrigue researchers and myself. And then we have the bee sting, which is also actually has healing benefits. I did an episode about it. It's a while back, episode 204, Shrooms and Bees. And in that episode, I talked to Shonang Holm, and she is a shamanic therapist, teacher, author, poet, and she is into the art of beekeeping and the healing properties of bee venom. So you might check out that episode 204. So I won't say too much about it. Everything you want to know is in that episode. But let me just say that contrary to the instinctive urge to avoid a bee sting, the venom released during the sting has been found to contain anti-inflammatory substances such as Mellitin, if I pronounce that correctly, Mellitin. This compound may offer relief to those suffering from chronic inflammatory diseases like arthritis. Researchers suggest that in controlled dosages, bee venom can help reduce inflammation and alleviate pain. Although individuals should always consult a healthcare professional, of course, because some might have a severe allergic reaction. The two times I got stung now with my beehive, I mean, it didn't really hurt that much. I expected it to hurt more than it did. Mainly because I remember when I was a child, I stepped on, like, I don't know what they're called, but you know, like the bees who live in the ground, like I stepped on one of those hives and they stung my foot, and that fucking hurt. But now I've been stuck in the neck and in the head, and it wasn't too bad. Of course, as you know, the bees are endangered. And fundamental as they are to the web of life and contributing so much to our ecological balance, even though they're so important, they face an array of threats that risk their survival. Habitat loss, pesticides, disease are decimating bee population at an alarming rate. So there is an urgent conservation effort required, and I'm part of it because I have a beehive. And I have one beehive. My plan is to have at least 6 or 7, and maybe more. Depends on how greedy I get. Beekeeping plays a pivotal role in saving these crucial pollinators, and it provides a safe haven where they can thrive and continue to contribute to a healthy ecosystem. And I can't just put 7 beehives on my property and expect them to produce honey in large quantities if there's not enough flowers. So I've actually spent almost more time this summer building flower beds, and I have like a slope on my property, like a hillside, which is a bit annoying. So I'm making like a step I've been doing some masonry, building some walls to make this hill like stepped, you know, so I can plant more flowers. So by maintaining and protecting hives, beekeepers, we ensure the continuation of plant diversity, stable crop yields, and the natural production of foods. And in fact, if you place a beehive next to like some crop, it can increase the crop by 16%. So they do make a difference. And beekeeping fosters sustainable livelihoods. It empowers communities and is intrinsic to maintaining the delicate balance our world so deeply depends on. And one experience I had when I tell somebody I'm a beekeeper, I only get positive responses. I've never been a drug dealer. Well, I have been a drug dealer once. I was a drug dealer for one day many years ago when I was like maybe 20, because I smoked a lot of hash at the time. And I smoked so much hash, I thought, well, why don't I just like fucking invest some money and just start selling it? You know, like I might, you know, then I can, like, you know, I sell and then I keep some for myself so I can basically be smoking it for free. So me and a buddy, we bought like an ounce of hash, and I'm not joking. Like we bought this lump of hash. I was standing in the kitchen, cutting it up, and wrapping it, like, because we were gonna sell it in, you know, smaller quantities. And by the time I had cut up the whole piece, it was gone. It was all sold. We sold it all. Like my friend, I cut a piece, he took it, went outside, sold it, came back in, took another. He sold it quicker than I cut it. It was fucking insane. And I thought, like, no, I'm out of this, because if this is dangerous, like, this shit, it sells itself more than I would ever expect. And this could be dangerous, like greed could take over here. But it reminds me of the beekeeping, because just like the hash, the drug, it sells itself. You don't really need to be a drug pusher, because the shit sells itself. You don't need to push drugs. The drug pushes itself, you know, like, you don't have to push the drug, you know. Same with the honey. You don't have to like try and sell it. Like, it sells itself. Like, I've sold all the honey I harvested this year, and it wasn't much, but it was 20, 30 kilos. It sells itself. I didn't even try and sell it. People are like, oh, you have a honey, you have a beehive, I want to buy some. You know, like, and the rumor spreads, and like, it's like a fucking drug. No wonder it's called liquid gold. Anyway, that's enough. I hope it wasn't too boring listening to some facts about bees. Check out my YouTube. Have a listen. I play this in every episode. I don't know if you paid any attention to it or if you listened to it, but let me play this little advert I made for my History of Alchemy podcast series. Check it out.
In a world veiled in mystery and driven by the quest for the impossible, join Alex on a transformative journey through the arcane art of transmutation. From ancient practices to the birth of modern science, we will uncover the secrets and stories of history's most enigmatic philosophers. The Natural Born Alchemist podcast presents a series that explores the trials, triumphs, and mystical pursuits of alchemy, the original quest for wisdom and power. Be sure to subscribe and unlock the vault of forgotten knowledge. Don't miss a single episode of this detailed telling of the history of alchemy, where we turn the leaden pages of history into podcast gold.
All right, let's close. You can only close this episode with one song. You know the song. Come on. Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov, The Flight of the Bumblebee. Okay, it's a bumblebee, but still, this song is perfect. And in fact, I often listen to it when I drive to buy beehive equipment, because I think it's funny. I don't know when the next episode is going to be out, but whenever it is out. I hope you'll be there to check it out. Please leave a nice review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and share it with your friends. Freedom is in the hive and in the mind.